I'm Nicole.
And I'm Brandon, and this is Spectrum Sessions,
where we talk about all things like diagnosis. We're also therapists and come at this with not only personal experience, but clinical experience as well. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Spectrum Sessions. I wanted to spend some time introducing ourselves to our listeners. I'm Nicole. I use she, her pronouns. I'm a licensed professional counselor in the state of Pennsylvania, and I'm a late diagnosed autistic female. I'm about to turn 30, and I was diagnosed when I was 26 years old.
Hey, I'm Brandon. I am the co-host of this autism podcast. I was diagnosed when I was 22. I go by he, him pronouns. When I found out that I was autistic, it really gave me such a better sense of purpose and a sense of meaning. And now that I do counseling for a living, it's really given me a outlet to give even more appreciation to the autism community. And that's what I want to continue to do with this podcast.
My intention for the podcast is to educate listeners through personal and professional experience. We're going to be discussing a wide range of topics from differential diagnoses, co-occurring diagnoses, masking, clinical insights, interpersonal dynamics, communication and executive function challenges, and other struggles we may face as autistic adults. I believe Brandon and I have a very niche corner of the universe to explore as late diagnosed autistic therapists. I've been sitting with the idea of doing a podcast for some time now. I don't want to perpetuate the myth that autism only exists in children. I want to dismantle the myth that late diagnosed autistic folks don't struggle or that a diagnosis isn't useful in adulthood. And I want to challenge clinicians' views of autism. I was so excited to meet Brandon through our job, share my podcast idea with him, and have him come on board. Our plan is to release weekly episodes, and the first few episodes are going to focus on the topic of misdiagnosis and co-occurring diagnoses.
I want to say it was great to meet you too, Nicole. I share such a pleasure when I meet someone else on the spectrum, and to have a colleague on the spectrum is quite a nice treat. Ask you a question. When did you begin to suspect you were different?
So I had a unique experience where I went to a very tiny Polish Catholic private school, kindergarten through eighth grade, where we had combined classrooms, and there was usually only 3 to 6 kids per grade. So I did not experience anything hurtful during my time here. I began experiencing differences when I would spend time with my friends who were in public schools. And then when high school came for me, it was a major adjustment, and I experienced more covert bullying.
So Nicole, like with covert bullying, you know, bullying is such a common issue with people in the autism community going through school. What advice would you maybe give to someone who was, you know, in school dealing with bullying who had autism?
It's hard and sad, and I just really have a lot of, you know, empathy for anyone going through that. And I feel like as time goes on, kids get kind of more and more mean. So I can't even imagine, you know, the schools in today's world. I think that just trying to find your people. I know for me, like, there was always like one or two people that I really gravitated towards. And so like stick by them. There's always going to be people that aren't nice in the world. So you kind of just have to ignore that, because as you continue to go on and as you, you know, go into adulthood, there's always going to be people that don't like you or aren't nice to you. So I would say, you know, just ignore them and stay true to yourself.
Yeah, I totally agree, you know, and I don't think there's a perfect answer to this. But when I went through all of high school being bullied and being bullied by the teachers, quite frankly, I never utilized the school counselor once.
Yeah.
And I give that advice to a lot of my clients. I say, utilize the school counselor. You know, they're trained in counseling. And that can be one resource you can use. And, you know, whenever you're getting bullied, tell somebody. You know, it's not tattling. You're helping yourself feel comfortable in an environment where you have to be at. And there is no shame in telling a school authority figure.
Exactly. And I think school, you know, counselors are great. But I think, too, depending on the age of the kid, if they're old enough to ask their parents, like, say, hey, I want to get therapy outside of school. I think that's another great resource as well.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. And we're both therapists, so we can definitely point that as a good direction to go towards. Yes, if you have someone who, if you have a child who's going through autism or bullying, or know someone is, you know, you can always recommend therapy. That is a great place to, you know, feel safe and talk about some of these things.
Especially if you're matched with an autistic therapist.
Especially if you are, right.
After the covert bullying, I just really realized I had no idea how to engage in conversation with people. I never initiated conversations, and all my friendships are because the other person started talking to me first. I noticed I was struggling much more than other people around me seemed to struggle. The level of anxiety I experienced seemed much more significant than those around me. I actually went through a period of time where the only color shirt I'd wear was black because of how much I'd sweat from my anxiety.
I can so relate to that because every day was like this anxious terror for me in school. And I completely relate to that. And if I had more black clothes, I would probably have been wearing them too. But with the anxiety, that's another thing, you know. It's not a bad thing to get counseling, and it's definitely not, you know, and talk about that anxiety. And I think Nicole and I as counselors, we can affirm that that's a great place for someone. And I think I, as a teenager, would have absolutely loved to have had me as a counselor, not to
toot my own horn. Yeah. Anxiety is so bad. And I almost didn't go to my own high school graduation because of it. I didn't want to go to my college graduation, but I went to both. And luckily, I guess, if you want to look at it this way, my grad school graduation was messed up because of COVID, so I didn't have the chance to go to that one. So yeah, that's how bad my anxiety gets. And a lot of people don't see that aspect. And I think that's why I kind of flew under the radar for as long as I did, going to such a tiny school, kind of, you know, internalizing all of my severe anxiety. There's often people I come across, classmates, peers, they would be like, "Oh, Nicole seems so calm." And I'm just like, that is so funny.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. Autism is really in its infancy. You know, if you look at the whole scheme of things, it wasn't really even classified as a disorder on its own until the 70s. And I think there is just so much ignorance about anxiety or about autism as well, because going back, I had some hallmark traits of autism, complete black and white thinking, anxiety, terrible social communication, no eye contact, and no one even mentioned autism once. So, I think that there definitely needs to be more awareness in schools.
Agreed. Yeah. I've been in therapy. I think I started when I was like 12 even. And like nobody wasn't on the radar for anybody at any point in time, even after I'd been seeing my therapist for like a decade consistently. Throughout school, I tended to be friends with more males. And I tended to be friends with older people as well. I was never really friends with people my age per se. Like a handful. But I always gravitated towards like elderly people. And so I just think that boys are very much more direct than girls. And I think that girls, it can get really confusing. I don't know. I think there's just this thing to girlhood. And it's just like, if you're not in it, you're not in it. And I'm not in it.
Try having autism and being in a relationship with a woman. It can be very hard when they're not completely direct. I miss all the gray area.
So I guess the only other thing I want to mention is just the way in which I come across. I think that has made my life exponentially more difficult. Most of the people that I do become friends with after the fact, they're like, "Oh, wow, you were so intimidating and you were so mean and I was like scared of you." I don't know. I'm just sitting there minding my business, and people tend to assume that I'm just like a really mean person, when in reality, all I want is like somebody to approach me and make a connection with them and be myself. But that's really hard to do.
Yeah, that is really true, Nicole. I think with people with autism, there's sometimes there's that like grizzly bear effect where the grizzly bear is more afraid of the camper than you are of him.
It
can be very hard for people, I think, to approach someone with autism because they just feel like, oh, that person, I think, wants to be left alone. Mm-hmm. And I may be generalizing there, but yeah, I think that that's what a lot of people felt.
Do you find it easy to like make friends, or do you relate to what I said about how like you kind of wait for friends to kind of come to you?
I would say I'm still growing in that area. One, I'm an introvert to go with my autism, which doesn't make me a social butterfly. And I also have sensory issues with sound. And a lot of the areas I feel like that you hang out with friends are in bars or concerts or what parties or whatever. And I stay away from those things like the plague because of the anxiety it brings me. So I'd say my best friend is my fiance, and I feel extremely lucky for that. And other than that, I do not really have any friends.
I hear you. I'm the same. My husband is like my number one. Yeah, that's what we're working with.
But I wanted to make a point to that too. You know, I've learned to be friends with myself. And that has taken so long to do. But now I like, you know, I'll have a day where I'm not with my fiance, and I'll go to the movies and I'll get a burrito by myself. Yeah. And it just feels good. I'm like, oh man, I actually enjoy my own company.
Yeah.
And I wish that for everyone with autism to be able to get to a point where they just enjoy their own company.
Yeah, that is important. For me, I've recently discovered that as well. But in the past, I was kind of like shackled by the inability to go anywhere by myself. I feel like I definitely always needed a support person, whether that was a friend or a partner. I just didn't like to do things on my own. But now I definitely, you know, find enjoyment out of it. And it's not what I prefer all the time, but I do enjoy it in small doses. But I want to ask, what did your journey to diagnosis look like, Brandon?
My journey to diagnosis was... some people with autism, they have co-occurring disorders and are more likely to get them. I got bipolar disorder when I was in my early 20s, and being treated for that, I was seeing a therapist and they said, oh, you for sure have Asperger's, no doubt about it. And so I said, oh, you know, okay. I wasn't thrilled at the time, but it really felt, you know, like the wheels started turning looking back. And so what about you, Nicole?
Yeah, so mine was a lot different. I think, you know, you being a male and me being a female, our journeys are different. And I think that that's another reason why I think we have such a unique thing going here, is because I do value the importance of both of our male and female perspectives. But for me, I didn't start heavily considering autism as a diagnosis until I was about 22 or 23. I began kind of asking people what they thought, their opinions. My therapist, professor, classmates, friends all expressed doubt that I could be autistic. But what they don't get to witness is the important part here. I'm asked very heavily in grad school and during practicum and internship is when my autism became most apparent. And I'll be really blunt, the whole experience was fairly traumatizing. I love school. I love to learn. I love to research and write papers. My end goal was actually to be a clinical psychologist, but I do not adjust to unexpected change and new environments well, and I do not socialize well unless I'm masking or I feel comfortable enough to be myself. I think I blacked out 85% of my program due to the extreme levels of anxiety I was experiencing. I think I cried at least 3 out of 5 days of the week for the entirety of those 3 years. I go back and forth on whether or not I take back my master's program if I could. Some days, it's the accomplishment that I'm most proud of. Other days, I regret that I got myself into this box where I masked so heavily that I landed a career where it's literally the whole part of my job to interact with people. And it gives me perpetual anxiety to varying degrees. I'm now expected to upkeep this. I've reached a level where, you know, there's sort of no going backward. I do daydream of living a life in Vermont and owning a flower shop and living a simple life. So once I completed my master's, that's when I started to heavily research autism in adult women. And I spent the better part of 2 years making this my special interest, and it's still my special interest, clearly. It was a constant back and forth of, am I making this all up? No, I really am struggling this badly. Normal people don't research autism in women for 2 years. I think as an autistic woman, gaslighting yourself 1,000 times when going through your diagnosis journey should be part of the criteria for a diagnosis. Something that was really useful to me when I was considering diagnosis for myself was Samantha Kraft's unofficial autism checklist. So Samantha Kraft is not in the mental health field. She is autistic herself and has an autistic child. So she kind of compiled this list of characteristics and traits that she commonly noticed in herself and in other people that she came across. So I use that, and the suggested use for that is to check off all areas that strongly apply to you. And if each area has 75 to 80% of the statements checked or more, then you may want to consider that you may have autism. And I know for me, that was a huge part. And I did bring that to my psychologist when I was going through diagnosis. And I do think it's a very helpful tool. And I think that autistic voices really should be the gold standard. I don't think that we should be trusting neurotypicals to kind of come up with these criteria.
Is there something that you find most helpful about having the diagnosis?
I think that I just look back on myself and my life with more understanding and kindness towards myself. I don't judge myself for mistakes that I've made. I don't think poorly of myself due to other people treating me poorly. I don't try to force myself into things anymore. I don't try to force connections with family or friends. I don't try to force social interactions in general. I acknowledge my limitations and I honor them when I can. What about you?
So being part of the autism community is the biggest part probably for me that's been beneficial to having the diagnosis. It opens up the doorway for so many cool things. There's so many, yesterday I went to an autism coffee group in Bethlehem that my friend runs at their coffee shop, and I got to hang out with 10 or 11 other autistic people, and they were just so nice and so full of life and energy, and we all just kind of hung out and connected, and without having the diagnosis, you know, or someone else not having it, that's not possible. Mm-hmm. And it's also something to be said about symptoms not being behavioral traits, because or personality traits rather, because, you know, if you have a cold or the flu and you are bedridden for 3 days, you wouldn't describe yourself as lazy, but because those are just symptoms of something you're going through. And, you know, sometimes the symptoms of autism can be really hard and they can really make your life difficult. And I think it's important to separate the disorder from the fact that you might just be lazy, because that's what people told me about me my whole life. So once I started realizing, no, I have executive function issues, and no, I have really, really hard time multitasking, and I've learned to work around these issues and manage them the best I can. And so I would say that is the most, some of the biggest things about being part of the autism community that I like the most.
Yeah, recognizing that they're not character flaws as other people kind of put on to you.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to say thanks for tuning in to our very first episode. Please subscribe and spread the word. I'd like to send listeners off with a Ralph Waldo Emerson quote. This happens to be my favorite quote of all time. To be yourself in a world that is constantly trying to make you something else is the greatest accomplishment. Thank you for tuning in. Stay curious.